We are now beginning a new topic, and this is a topic of, it's an important topic for everyone. It's a topic of Guru Tattva. Tattva means truth. Tattva, you could say, also means science. And Guru, of course, means teacher. But Guru has broader implications and broader applications, and because it has such broad applications and implications, and there are different kinds of gurus, it's often misunderstood. And so I wanted to clear up that misunderstanding, and I also wanted to discuss very broad aspects of what it means to be guru, and very specific aspects, and discuss things more specifically you may not be aware of. Even though you may know a lot about Krishna consciousness, you still may not be aware of it. So, I wanted to begin first by defining what we mean by guru in Krishna consciousness, because, or more, not only in Krishna consciousness, but a strict definition of guru. Because the word in Sanskrit, guru, means teacher. So then if we say guru is teacher, that means anyone who is a teacher is a guru, right? So it's not exactly what it means. There's a broad discussion of guru within Krishna consciousness, and then there's a broad definition of guru outside of spiritual circles, which is teacher. But within spiritual circles, or it's within the stricter understanding of guru, guru means someone who's coming in a line of teachers. So if someone says he's a guru, then strictly speaking, we say, who is your teacher? Who is his teacher? Who is his teacher? Who is his teacher? And sometimes Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, would be told about a great devotee. And then he would ask what spiritual line or succession of gurus he comes in. And if he were told, no, he's just a bhakta, he doesn't come in a line, then he would say that kind of bhakti is a sham, it's not authorized. Just like the example that Prabhupada would often give, let's say you require heart surgery. So you probably wouldn't go to a barber and say, well, you know how to use a razor, so why don't you do it? And oftentimes, people just don't go to any surgeon, but they check his credentials. What's his reputation? They find out from other people if they can. You had this operation. How did it go? And obviously, he can't practice unless he's got a medical degree and he's done internship and so on. So that concept, of course, it's there everywhere in the world. But what you do have, a lot of what you find is where subjects are not so serious, people are like kind of self-proclaimed philosophers and teachers. And so in spiritual circles, in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, in Krishna consciousness, it's always what succession are you in? And if you're not in a succession, then it's considered, not only two things are considered, your understanding of Krishna consciousness is subject to, how should we say, it's not considered authorized, and your bhakti or devotion is not considered authorized in the sense that it must go through a spiritual master as the via media to Krishna, and that spiritual master offers it to his spiritual master and to his spiritual master. It's just the system that Krishna uses. So guru in Krishna consciousness means he's a teacher, but he's coming in a line of teachers which is unbroken that go back to Krishna. And the other example Prabhupada gives, he's like a postman. That he's like the postman doesn't go through your mail read the letter and edit it. Or you're getting some money in the mail, he takes out one of the checks, cashes it himself, gives you the rest. So Prabhupada uses that example because he said so-called gurus or spiritual teachers, they'll get a teaching and then they'll say, no, this part isn't right, or we're going to add this. Which is, it's okay to add if what you add is your realization, which conforms with what the previous teachers are saying or what expands upon it. But the problem is people add their own idea. And then the whole concept of the cyclic line coming down is lost. So what was once pure is now lost. Just like the example Prabhupada gives is the mango. You pass the mango down. You go high on the tree, pass it down to someone who's lower, lower, lower. You don't just throw it down because it'll get smashed. So each person holds it and gives it to the next person. So why is that important? Well, one of the main reasons it's important is because those who are practicing Krishna consciousness will always be in a position to, at some time or another, teach other people about Krishna consciousness. Just like William is here and he's saying, William came online and he's new to Krishna consciousness. And he's saying, who is Krishna? So any of you could tell him who is Krishna, right? You don't have to be a scholar to tell him. So, and you'll meet people, they'll know you're into Krishna consciousness, they'll say, what does this mean? So what you're going to do is you're going to repeat what you've heard from your spiritual master, from Srila Prabhupada, from your Siksha gurus, from other devotees who are your teachers. That's what you're going to do. And I'm saying all this, which I think you all know, but it leads up to something I'm going to read now. And it's very, very interesting to read this because what I'm going to read is very, very clear, I think, to all of you, but at the same time, it's just interesting how it's not clear. Okay. This is a lecture that Srila Prabhupada is giving on his Vyas Puja, and he's saying, he quotes the verse, Lord Chaitanya says, Mara agai guru hana tara edesh. Yare daka tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. Amar agai guru hana tara edesh. In this way, on my order, become guru. So now Prabhupada, in this lecture, he addresses this statement of Mahaprabhu, on my order, become guru. Because if I tell you, I say, Leslie, become guru. I say, Pallavi, become guru. I say, Sushma, become guru. Timothy, become guru. Madhukanta, become guru. Marina, become guru. Timothy, Palak, Sundarup, become guru. William, Palik, Tikash, Uma, become guru. What's your response? I can't become guru. No, guru is a big thing. Guru, that's a serious thing. Guru is, he sits on a big seat. He wears a flower garland. He has followers. They wash his feet. They do whatever he says. He has to take their karma. He has to be an uttama bhakta. Like that. That's generally how we think of guru. So, in our movement, in the Krishna consciousness movement, when we say guru, then generally the conception that most devotees have is someone who gives initiation. And out of the many, many thousands and thousands of disciples of Srila Prabhupada and the many more thousands of devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement and even devotees around in other movements, they're not, how many gurus are there? Maybe 100 people. If you go to other movements, maybe 150 people are actually giving diksha. So I think, well, that's rare. So can't expect me to be a guru. That's not, I'm not a guru. The guru is a big thing. Guru is this very elevated devotee. So Prabhupada addresses this, and it's very important to understand this if we're going to understand the definition of guru, because there are many kinds of gurus. So Prabhupada quotes that verse, on my order become guru. Who did he speak that to? Does anybody know? Is anybody familiar with the Chaitanya Charitamrita? This is a very famous verse. Amar agai guru. On my order become guru. Tata edesh. And deliver your land. Does anybody know who Lord Chaitanya spoke that to? It's very interesting. Does anybody know the story? It was a devotee who approached Mahaprabhu. Sundarupa is aware of it. This devotee approached Mahaprabhu. He wanted to come with him. He was a grihasta. And Mahaprabhu spoke this verse and said, stay in your village. Whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. In this way, become guru and deliver your village. So, you know, we can say he was just, an ordinary devotee, like ourselves, just another devotee. Of course, he's in the lila of Mahaprabhu, so how could he be just an ordinary devotee? But for the sake of this pastime, he's playing the part of just another devotee, a grihasta, who, of course, a very good devotee who wants to be with Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu, having confidence that he understands Krishna consciousness, says, no, become guru. How become guru? By telling people about Krishna. So let's read what Prabhupada says. Just see, it is very nice. You'll find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says he is the Supreme Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says he is the Supreme Lord Krishna. In other words, Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord. He says, Amar Agai. Whatever I say, Amar Agai, by my order you become a spiritual master. So one may be very illiterate. No education and no scholarship, may not be born in a Brahmin family, or may not be a sannyasi. There's so many qualifications, but one may not have all these qualifications. He may be rascal number one, but still he can become spiritual master. How? Amar Agai. As Krishna says, as Mahaprabhu says, if you follow, then you become spiritual master. In other words, you're repeating. What he means is you're repeating what they say. One baby may be rascal number one from material estimation, but if he simply, strictly follows whatever is said by Mahaprabhu or his representative, then he becomes a guru. So, there are two things that are described here. One is that you repeat what is said. You may be a rascal, you may be illiterate, you may not be so intelligent, but you hear something, then you repeat it. And if what you hear is correct, then you just have to repeat it the way you've heard it, and it's as powerful as when you heard it from someone who is more elevated than you. That's the whole, as Prabhupada's saying, that's the whole secret. So he goes on. It's not very difficult. One may, of course, the other point Prabhupada says is you not only repeat it, but you follow it. So you're chanting 16 rounds. You're following the four regulative principles. You are practicing Krishna consciousness. You're following those teachings. So now you're practicing, and then you're repeating. Now you're guru. That's the definition of guru in disciplic line. You're not manufacturing anything. You're delivering. So it's not very difficult. One may not think that I'm not qualified to become guru. No, you are qualified if you follow strictly the parampara system. Then you are qualified. That's all. Amar agai guru hana. What is the difficulty? Mahaprabhu says, don't feel any difficulty because the spiritual master, what you have to do, yare daka tare kaha, Krishna upadesh. Whomever you meet, you simply speak to him the instruction which Krishna gives. What instruction Krishna gives? That is also very easy. What is that? Krishna says, man mana bhava mad bhakto madjiji mam namaskuru. Krishna says, just become my devotee. Always think of me. Offer me obeisances and worship me. So here is Krishna. If you think, here is Radha Krishna. You may be fool number one, rascal number one. That doesn't matter. But you are getting impression of Radha and Krishna. think of him. Oh, how nicely Krishna's decorated this much. No erudite scholarship. Simply, Krishna says, manmana bhava madbhakto. Here is the deity. Worship him nicely, as it is a regulated principle. Even you're not worshiping, simply think of Krishna. Here is Radha and Krishna. What is the difficulty? As soon as you see Krishna, you get some impression. So Prabhupada's saying, it's okay, here's the instruction. You can give the instruction, and the instruction's not difficult. You see the deity, you worship the deity, or you just think of Krishna. So, simply by accepting this principle, even if you're not learned, illiterate, you are hearing so much from Bhagavad Gita. You simply repeat that. Simply repeat that. There's no question of becoming very learned. God has given you this ear. Even if you're blind, you cannot read, you can hear. Krishna Upadesh. Krishna says, Sarva Dharman, Paritaja, Mamekam Shadanam Braja. So if you simply preach this cult, my dear friend, my dear brother, you surrender to Krishna, you become spiritual. Not that you're telling the person, you become spiritual master. But if you preach, my dear brother, my dear friend, surrender to Krishna, then you, parenthesis the preacher, become spiritual master. You become spiritual master. You go door to door. Go door to door. No other talk. Simply say, my dear friend, you're very nice. You're very learned. Just become Krishna conscious. So I hope so. Now here is a very interesting point. And this point, what's so interesting about it is that you and others, or many of you who are sitting out there, are going to hear this and think, no, this doesn't relate to me. So let me read it. So I hope that all of you men, women, boys and girls become spiritual master. No, no, not me. That doesn't relate to me. No, Prabhupada is speaking to all the boys and girls, men and women in the audience. This lecture is early in the movement. So these are not highly qualified people. So he's speaking to all of us. So I hope all of you, men, women, boys and girls, become spiritual master and follow this principle. Spiritual master, simply, sincerely, follow the principles and speak to the general public. Then Krishna immediately becomes your favorite. Krishna does not become your favorite. You become Krishna's favorite. Krishna says in the Gita, Nachatasman manusheshu kaschid me priyakritama. One who is doing this humble service of preaching work, Krishna consciousness, nobody is dearer than him to me. So if you want to become recognized by Krishna very quickly, you take up this process of becoming spiritual master. Present the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Your life is perfect. Now, hope you're all still be able to hear. The devotee he instructed, I forgot his name. Grihastha devotee. I forgot his name. You'll have to... Sundarupa, do you know his name? Was it Korma? Was his name Korma Brahmanan? I think it was Korma. So, now, here's something very important. Prabhupada said, one who's doing this humble service of preaching, nobody's dearer than him. To me. So if you become recognized by Krishna, you take up this process of becoming spiritual master. So you take up this process of becoming spiritual master. So what is Prabhupada? What is Prabhupada saying here? Prabhupada's giving this, excuse me, he's giving a very broad definition of spiritual master. What is he saying? One, as we read, whoever you meet, you tell them about Krishna as you've heard it from your authorities, from your spiritual masters, and you follow it, and then you become spiritual master. And I have an interesting experience that I was listening, it may have been this lecture actually, I was in Nasik, I think it was Nasik, and they had, for Bhagavatam class, they had Prabhupada giving a lecture, and Prabhupada was speaking a lot about becoming guru. And I could see that everyone was thinking becoming guru means becoming Diksha Guru, giving initiation. And so as Prabhupada was talking about that, I just got the sense that everyone in the class was thinking, this doesn't relate to me at all. And then the end, Prabhupada said, I want all of you to become guru. And I felt, again, that whoever was sitting there didn't get that. They thought that was, it was not for them at all. But when Prabhupada's saying, I want you all to become guru, he's saying everybody, everyone who teaches Krishna consciousness, you become guru. That's actually what you really are when you're teaching it. Now, any devotee who's teaching, giving a class, he's assuming the role of Siksha Guru. Your temple president is a Siksha Guru. The mother and father are the Siksha Gurus of their children. Authorities are Siksha Gurus. But it doesn't mean that there's this bond between the Siksha Guru and the person. You are on the street, you're teaching someone about Krishna consciousness, and then they come to the temple. And they say, you are the one that brought me here. There's someone becomes a devotee and says, you were the first one I met. You were the one that helped me. You brought me to Krishna consciousness. And then they go on later and they take diksha from another guru. But you were their Vartma Pradarshika guru. You were the one who first led the path. And you were also instructing them in Krishna consciousness. So there is a concept of guru, preacher guru. Siksha Guru as a preacher. In other words, it's not like there's a strong bond of service, faith, devotion as there is to one's Diksha Guru or when the Siksha Guru relationship is what we call Sadguru. Then the relationship is, oh, this is my Guru, this is the person I surrender to, this is the person I have absolute faith in, this is the person who's guiding me. That is the Siksha Guru in the position of Sadguru. Sadguru means then you're establishing a relationship based on inquiry, submission, surrender, and deep faith. So that may not be there in every interaction. So you may not be accepting a guru in that role, or you may not, and generally what Prabhupada's referring here to is you're not necessarily in that position of guru, where you're now have taken responsibility for the spiritual life of this person, or this person's life is in some degree or in a great degree dependent on you, and they're establishing this permanent bond of you as their Siksha Guru, as you guiding them, and they see you basically the same as they see their Diksha Guru, and they deal with you in the same way they deal with their Diksha Guru. And in some cases, it's even more intimate than they deal with their Diksha Guru. So that's not exactly what Prabhupada's discussing here. He's discussing, giving the definition of Guru in the broadest sense, and then telling us, in that sense, you all become Guru, that your work of spreading Krishna consciousness, of giving it to others, you're actually taking the position of Guru. And then what happens when you do that? Well, people give you a little honor and respect, and you have to take that respect. That's part of the service. It's part of the austerity. And what does Prabhupada say? That whenever you are given respect, that respect is meant for Krishna. That when anybody gives us respect, actually what they're doing, at least the way we see it, is that that is being offered to Krishna. That is a glorification of Krishna. So the devotee, when he is glorified, when he's honored, when he is served, he goes right through him, he offers it to his guru and all the way up the disciplic succession. And that goes back to Krishna. So he never thinks it's for me. He's being honored. And even as a young devotee, if you do something nice, you'll be honored. Or you're speaking to other people, and they say, oh, you speak so nicely, or you've helped me so much. So now you're being honored, even you're a very young devotee. And the devotee thinks, this is because of the grace of my guru. So all that honor, he doesn't think it's his own honor. He thinks that's glorification of my guru. That's how he takes it. So he never becomes proud. And Prabhupada gives an interesting example. You've probably heard this example, but I'm kind of going over some basic things now, which a lot of you are aware of, but I wanted to just kind of clarify it. Maybe all of you are not aware of, but Prabhupada gives this example. course, if you're not British, then you don't understand the position of viceroy. And I'm not British, so I'm assuming a viceroy is in some way similar to an ambassador. Or he is an ambassador, maybe not officially in the position of ambassador as an American ambassador, but he is an ambassador for the country. So the viceroy used to visit different countries as representative of the King and Queen of England. And the viceroy would receive gifts, and oftentimes he would receive jewels or other valuable gifts. And it was the law or the principle that the viceroy could not accept personally any of those gifts. That would be a breach of his position as viceroy. So whatever was given, no matter how much was given, he couldn't think, well, there's 10, I'll just take one. The government, the king, queen, they already have these, they don't need more. No, it was never like that. So that's the position of guru. So the guru is being honored, and it's never about himself. Oh, I feel honored to be honored. It's always that this honor is not for me, it's for my guru. It's for Krishna. And so even you're not a Diksha guru, or even you don't have Siksha relationship with somebody, but when you as a teacher, when you teach, you will get some honor eventually, sooner or later. People will respect you. Younger devotees will respect you. People will at least thank you and appreciate your work. That's part of the work of becoming guru, part of the challenge for us as teachers, as representatives of what's being taught in Krishna consciousness, even from the early days, because even some people, they read about Krishna consciousness, they get excited and they tell their friends. And they're very new to Krishna consciousness, but they believe in it and they want to tell people about it. So right from the beginning, we have to learn the position. What are we doing? We're the postman, peon, we're delivering the mail, and so I'm delivering $100. Doesn't mean I'm rich with $100. It just means I can walk and I can deliver the mail, or I can repeat what I've heard. That's my qualification. And so I remember once I gave a class, and in the class I was isolating. For each topic in the class, I was isolating essential instructions that Prabhupada gave. Instructions that were, I think, clarify these points in the best way possible. So then I would make those points. I didn't say Prabhupada said, I would just make those points. I'd give the examples, make the points, go to the next point, give the example, make the point. And then after the class, several people came up, or maybe particularly in this class, many people came up and said, that was an amazing class. It was just incredible. And I was thinking, but all I did was just isolate these incredible points that Prabhupada made to elucidate and clarify difficult subject matter. That's all I did. So it was so obvious to me when they were glorifying me that it was not at all my glory. It was simply me repeating what Prabhupada said. So that's the mood we have to be in. We're repeating what our gurus have said. And so if we repeat what our gurus have said, and it has a good effect on people, we should always be thankful. Thank you, all the predecessor acharyas, all the people, all the teachers that I have heard from. Thank you for giving me this knowledge, because now I can repeat it. So that's, you say, if there's any qualification to become a preacher or become a Siksha guru, it's that, those two things. You repeat, of course Prabhupada said you follow, and you always understand that you're an emissary, and so you can accept honor and it just passes right through you. It has nothing to do with you. That's very, very important. So, anyway, back to my other point. When Prabhupada speaks, and he speaks many times, I think there's another lecture here. Actually, many lectures about becoming guru. When he speaks about it, he's talking to us. You can't think he's not talking to you. He's talking to every one of us. Even that he's talking to the young devotees. So that's an important point to understand. He's talking to you, Leslie. Leslie's a guru. She does programs. So she's a guru to so many people. She doesn't really want to be, but I think we have to define the parameters of what it means. Your guru means you're a teacher. But you're leading people. So you're leading people to Prabhupada. You're leading people to other senior devotees. So you're a Vartma Pradarshika guru. You're one who's leading people on the path. So that may be your function. It's just simply to lead people to another person who can guide them further. Here, Prabhupada says, if you simply deliver the message given by Krishna, you become guru. You preach, you request everyone, sir, surrender to Krishna, you become guru. Very simple thing. Krishna said, man mana bhava man bhakto. You say that. You become a devotee of Krishna. You offer obeisances. Here is a temple. Please come here. Offer obeisances. And offer some flower or fruit. It's a simple thing. Anyone can do this. So this is a different lecture. And Prabhupada, again, he's making the exact same points he made in the lecture we just read, right? This is the guru's qualification. Guru does not show any magic or produce some wonderful things. Then he becomes guru. No. Practically, I have done this. People give me credit that I have done miracles, but my miracle is that I carry the message of Mahaprabhu. So this is the secret. Any one of you, you can become guru. Wow. You hear that. Any one of you, you can become guru. You're all sitting there. Not me. No. Prabhupada, the point is, he's talking to us right now and he's saying, it's not difficult. And he's saying, actually, if you're teaching Krishna consciousness, you're a guru. So now don't deny it, but understand what it is that you're doing. In other words, you are a guru because one time Prabhupada said, a guru means someone who knows more than you. So just like Pallavi, you know more than some of your friends about Krishna consciousness, or your relatives, you're bringing them. So you're a guru to them, and Pallavi's saying, no, I'm not a guru to them. No, but don't think of guru as somebody who sits on a big seat, who people bathe their feet. It's not like that. We have to consider what Prabhupada's saying here. Guru in the terms of one who's representing his guru and his guru in the disciplic line. That's guru. One who can tell people what Krishna spoke. That kind of guru we all are. And that's the kind of guru Prabhupada's telling us to be. And Prabhupada's saying that you can do that. You don't have to be extraordinary. What's the secret? Any one of you, you can become guru. It is not that I am an extraordinary man, an extraordinary God coming from some mysterious place. It is not that. It is a simple thing. Mahaprabhu says, yare daka tare kaha. Krishna upades. So I request you, you follow Mahaprabhu's instruction that you become a guru at your home. It is not that you have to make a gigantic show becoming guru. The father has to become guru. The mother has to become guru. Actually, in the Shastra, it is said one should not become father, one should not become mother, if he does not become a guru. Na mochayed ya samupetya mitum. If a person is unable to save his child from the clutches of birth and death, should not become a father. So now here Prabhupada is saying, it's not a big thing, it's a practical thing. What if he becomes guru? You are a teacher of the disciplic succession. So, okay, you're not a big guru, you're not initiating disciples, this, that, and the next thing. So, but you're guru of your child, father, the husband's supposed to be the guru of the family, the mother, the guru of the children. Leslie's the guru of the people that come to her program. She does programs. So, in some sense, she's a guru. She's giving them the holy name. I'm sure, Leslie, you've taught people how to chant who've never chanted before. So you're Vartma Pradarshika Guru. It's almost like in olden days, when people were given the holy name, that was like a kind of initiation, not officially. It was kind of like a Harinam Diksha. So when we give the people the holy name, it's like an informal initiation in a sense. Then it gets formalized later on. So in that sense, we're Guru also, because we're giving the holy name. I was in South Africa, and we I was doing at the Rath Yatra, I was doing a japa course. There, I think there were nearly 200 people, 150 people. So we were giving out beads to anyone who was new. And so afterwards, we said, any of you who want to keep the beads and bring this and chant at home can do so. And if you'd like, you can give a donation. So I said to the devotee who gave out the beads, I said, how many people kept the beads, took beads to chant? He said, 60 people. And I was joking, and he said, oh, I've just initiated 60 disciples. Because in traditional times, that was basically the initiation. It wasn't a formal thing. You give out the holy name. So we're all giving out the holy name, so we're gurus in that sense. So I'm elaborating on this. I think you understand this, but I think you don't understand it because we don't think of ourselves as guru. We think, and even amongst my god brothers, I say, when are you going to become guru? And they're like, no, I'm not qualified. But they already are gurus. That's the thing. Maybe they don't want to become diksha gurus and formalize relationships with people to that degree. But they already are gurus. And so in ISKCON, it goes back to this point. When we say guru, we're always thinking of diksha guru. But if you study Prabhupada's books, then you'll see in his books, when he talks about guru, it's extremely rare. Well, when he talks about guru generically, he never says diksha guru. He just says guru. Because the essence of guru is teacher. So diksha guru is one function of a guru. But the main function, or what we mean by guru, is teacher. So here's something interesting. If you're falling asleep or you've gone away, pay attention to this. Siksha, when we speak of guru, when we're using the word guru, when Prabhupada's using the word guru, surrender to guru, this and that, he's using it in the sense of siksha guru. And diksha guru is a function of the siksha guru, not the other way around. It's a function because Prabhupada says the siksha guru is one who gives relevant instructions, and the diksha guru is one who initiates one. It's a different function. And then Prabhupada says, and the diksha guru can also give siksha, and normally he does give siksha, and normally your siksha guru becomes your diksha guru. But the main connection with your guru was siksha. That's how it started. And then diksha becomes a function of that. And that's why if you already have a diksha guru, you can have another siksha guru, because the function of the guru is instruction. So obviously, once you've been initiated, you don't need to be initiated again, because that's a one-time function. Now, that's a principle, to accept initiation from a guru. But once you've accepted initiation, okay, that's done. What continues is the siksha. And so that's why it said you can have many siksha gurus, because siksha is the essence of guru-disciple relationship. Now, how do we know this? Well, we know it for many reasons. And I'll answer your question, Pallavi, in a minute. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was initiated by Bipini Bihari Goswami. And Bipini Bihari Goswami came in a bona fide disciplic succession of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. But he was from a Brahmin background, and he gave stress to Brahmanism in a way that we as Gaudiya Vaishnavas don't. And so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati actually had issues with him, philosophical issues. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't allow him to debate or present those things. And interestingly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur took diksha, so the diksha was bona fide. But in terms of instruction, because the instructions of Bipini Bihari Goswami were not always fully lined up with Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was taking instruction from Jagannath Das Babaji. So that when we think of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's guru, we think of Jagannath Das Babaji. That was his guru. So that was where his siksha was coming from. Now, in the Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we'll talk about this later, but there's a section in there, and it says, it talks of, there's a section about when to reject a guru. And so it gives some stipulations. If the person was not a Vaishnava who initiated you, and later you come to realize what Vaishnavism is, and they weren't, then you can reject them and take diksha from a Vaishnava guru. Or if they reject Vaishnavism, if they reject the Vaishnavas, they offend the Vaishnavas, they reject Vaishnavism, or they become helplessly addicted to sense gratification, then you can reject them. But there's one other situation where you're accepting a six-year guru, but you're not rejecting your guru, and that's when you find the six-year of your guru insufficient. You realize your guru doesn't know as much as you need to know, or your guru has helped you up to a point, but you need further help, and therefore, or another situation would mean he's helping you, but you need additional help in other areas. So it can be either way. It can be either you've taken so in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's case, he'd taken diksha, but the real help he was getting was from Jagannath Das Babaji. So that could be one scenario where you've got some instructions, but you feel this other person is the one who can really help you, and that's where you take shelter, and that's where you're taking guidance, and you don't feel the guidance from your diksha gurus is... you just feel that their knowledge is not deep enough or vast enough to take you where you need to go presently in your spiritual life. Or it can be an additional, that you also take instruction from someone else who's additionally helping you. So now you have the... You have many teachers, so, you know, two heads is better than one type thing. And so what we're talking here is taking shelter of them in the same way a devotee takes shelter of six-year gurus, seeing them non-different, honoring them, worshiping them, and so forth, in the same way as one worships their diksha guru. So we were having class the other day, Bhakti Vijayapurna Swami was saying, he said, this principle is not understood well in ISKCON. Said, but you could imagine someone who has a diksha guru also has one siksha guru, or two, or even three, you know, that where he has very deep relationship. And if he has a problem with any one of those gurus, he still has other gurus to take shelter of. So we know in ISKCON, some of the gurus have fallen away, they've left ISKCON, or they've actually fallen down from Krishna consciousness. And it has been a devastating experience for some. But those who are very attached to Prabhupada, or those who were taking shelter and guidance from another siksha guru, they had that shelter. So it wasn't, I mean, it's obviously difficult, but it wasn't so difficult. So that's something that, is not clearly understood in ISKCON, because when we say guru, we think it's diksha guru, we think it's a very high position, and that's why this whole discussion is going on right now where you're all talking. And now I'm going to address that point a little more. Hold on. Okay. So the Brahman that's Avanti Brahman? I don't think it was the Avanti Brahman. I thought it was Korma. It was Korma Brahman. And Avanti Brahman is another story, which we'll talk about later. But Sundarup, you can check. If you have access, you could check. So let's see. Thank you, Prabhupada. We're trying to teach people what Srila Prabhupada has given us. Thanks to his disciples like you, we have this gift to share. So, Sushma says, you are right, Leslie. But Pallavi says, but if one would start seeing oneself as guru, wouldn't that bring so much pride? And there goes whatever small amount of humility I might have. That's because of your conception of guru. You see, Pallavi, I'll tell you this nice, I don't know if I told you, I go on the internet a lot to look at other spiritual teachers to see what they're teaching, to look at YouTube to see who's out there and how our presence is or isn't. on YouTube and our presence is not strongly on YouTube, when you ask questions like, who is God, what is karma, what is Hinduism, we're not really prominent there, unfortunately. So that's a project I'm working on, or I would like to work on. All I require is time and money, both of which are time, money, and help, which is what you require for everything. But it's an important project. So anyway, so there was this interview with, if anyone has time, anyone has time they can give me, money or help, please send it right away. So they're interviewing, I watched this interview with the Dalai Lama, and the man who interviewed him, it's a fairly well-known talk show, he said, you're the most famous person I've ever met. And the Dalai Lama said, I'm just like you. You have a mind, a body, I have a mind and body, you have emotions, I have emotions. He said, I'm just a monk. I'm just one of 7 billion people. And then he went on to say, he said, one of my teachers said, if you ever become proud, you should always think you're the lowest. So the problem is, how we can, but if one would start seeing oneself as guru, but what do you mean by seeing yourself as guru? Wouldn't that bring so much pride? And there goes the amount of humility. Yeah, because you're defining guru in the wrong way. Now, what is guru? Very good question, Pallavi. What is guru? Guru means servant. A guru is a servant of his disciples. I get a lot of email, right, from people who want guidance from me, either disciples, aspiring disciples, or people who just want guidance. So when I'm giving them guidance, what am I doing? I'm serving them, am I not? Even if they're a disciple and I have to chastise them, or even if they're a disciple and I have to explain to them, you have to worship a guru in this way because that's the proper etiquette, and there's no one else to explain it but me because they haven't learned it. Now I have to explain the guru etiquette. You see, when you come in the temple, you have to pay obeisances to your guru, you have to chant his prana mantra. Every time you see him, you pay obeisances. On his birthday, you do Vyas Puja, you this, that, and the next. And I have to explain that. And that's like, wow, that's weird, isn't it? I mean, you would think that's really weird. But what is the guru thinking when he's doing that? He's thinking, there's a principle, and there's a principle that the disciple has to serve and honor his guru in a specific way. So it's my service to this devotee to teach them. But the guru is thinking, I am explaining a principle. Whether I'm their guru or not, I would explain exactly the same thing to anybody. Just like Leslie, so she takes shelter of Guru Nagarjuna Maharaj. So I would tell her, this is how you worship your guru. And I would tell her exactly the same things as I would tell people who are my disciples. So you understand? So what I'm doing is saying, here's the principle of guru. The principle of guru, this is an important thing to understand. There's a person and there's a principle. And so you're teaching, Pallavi, and you're representing the principle. What is the principle? The principle is guru represents Krishna. He's a representative of Krishna. As long as he's teaching what Krishna said, he's representing Krishna. So you, as a representative of Krishna, are teaching. So you, as guru, are a principle. It's not that I am guru. You know, check me out. I'm guru. I'm special. No. You are representing Krishna. And as long as you represent Krishna, you are guru. So there's a principle. One who represents Krishna is guru. So we bow down to that principle embodied in this person who's representing the principle, that for the disciple, the guru is representing Krishna. So the disciple sees the guru as representing Krishna. The guru doesn't think I'm Krishna. But the disciple sees, okay, here's Krishna coming to me as this guru, right? But what does the guru think? Okay, that's a principle, so I'm embodying that principle. But who am I? I am just a humble servant of my spiritual master. And the only reason I'm taking this position of guru is on his order. That's the whole point. That's why Mahaprabhu says, on my order. So I'm not doing this because I want to. I'm not doing this because I want followers. I'm not doing this because it feels good. Because it's his order. And if he orders me to stop doing it, then I don't do it anymore. So when you think, but when you say, but if one would start seeing oneself as guru, it means you're not seeing yourself as guru. You have the wrong conception of guru. Because if you see yourself as guru, you actually see your disciples like guru. And Prabhupada said that. I see my disciples like my guru. For two reasons. One, because I serve them. He said also, I see that my guru sent you to me to train you, and you're helping me, so you are representatives of my guru who are helping me. One of my godbrothers said, he said, actually, I see my disciples like godbrothers and godsisters, because they're all part of Prabhupada's family. So Prabhupada's our siksha guru. And then Prabhupada said, I see my disciples teach me because they're serving me so nicely, and I learn how to serve my guru by watching them serve me. And then Bhaktisiddhanta said, he said, the guru is like a teacher, and he's training his disciples to be gurus. So he said he's like a professor, medical professor, who's training doctors. So he sees his position as one who's training others to become doctors. So actually, when we're reading what Prabhupada's saying here, you can see he's training us to be gurus. So what is Prabhupada thinking? He's thinking, I'm training my disciples to be guru. Now, Dimpalva, you say, but the disciples bow down and they honor and all this. That's the print, because that's the etiquette, because the person is taking the post of guru. So I'm taking the post, but the person himself is very humble in his consciousness. But he's taking the post, so the post has a position and there's etiquette. But a post, it's like, let's say, Pallavi, you have a Ferrari and you let me use it. So I'm using it to serve Prabhupada. So I'm sitting in a Ferrari, but it doesn't mean people are looking at me thinking, who's this guy who owns a Ferrari? He must be special. No. I'm not special because it's not my Ferrari. I'm not special in that sense. Maybe I'm special because I'm driving it, but I'm not special because I own the Ferrari. So I'm sitting on the seat of Vyasadeva. But what's special is Vyasadeva, and what's special is that I represent Vyasadeva. But it's not me. So it's the guru, Tattva. It's like anyone who represents that position is special. And then that person is honored, not because of individual qualification, but because they're representing Vyas. So whatever honor you would get as a guru is honor to the position, not to you. And it's honor of the knowledge, and it's honor of the knowledge you receive from Prabhupada, you receive from your guru. That's what's being honored. So if you're in that consciousness, then there's no problem. If you're not in that consciousness, yeah, you're in for a big problem. So, Trinadapi Sunichena. So what, it's such an important instruction, isn't it? And in fact, you can only be a guru when you're Trinadapi Sunichena. You can only do this service of teaching when you exemplify this kind of humility, because then your knowledge, what you're helping, will communicate. And you are following what you teach, you're exemplifying what you teach, it communicates. So you have to exemplify humility. If you become proud, Krishna won't tolerate you. Krishna doesn't tolerate proud teachers. Anyway, let me read on. I basically know it's because of Prabhu that I can share Krishna, so he has the right respect, which I get, so I don't feel any pride. Yeah, so that's the proper attitude. How can I say that? Now it sounds like I'm puffed up because she's saying she's respecting me. But when I talk about guru, you have to understand I'm talking about guru in principle, like all gurus, guru tattva. I mean, in other words, if I didn't have disciples, then when I talk about guru, everyone is like fine with it. But now because I have disciples, then it's like, well, how can you say that you have disciples? But we're just talking about the principle, not talking about myself. We're talking about the principle. And any guru who talks about, so the guru gives a lecture. You have to completely surrender to your guru. Your guru owns you. Your guru owns everything. He's preaching like this, and you think, this guy's a megalomaniac because he's the guru, and he's telling everybody, give everything to me, surrender everything to me, I'm your life and soul, you can't, you know, I'm your breath. It's like, this is crazy. But it's the tattva, it's the guru tattva, it's the principle. This is the principle. So the person is not saying it because they want that and they enjoy that. Because anyway, when you surrender to them, they're just giving that to their spiritual master. All they're doing is telling you, go out and distribute Prabhupada's books. Serve. Do this and that. All they're doing, and it's not, hey, go out and I want you to buy me a house, I want you to buy me a car, because I want to live it up and enjoy. No. So then that's bogus. Okay. They're only telling you to render service in the mission of ISKCON and Srila Prabhupada. So, totally agree with you, Leslie. Shushma says, I totally agree with you. Madhukanta, all the way from, Kurma Brahmana, yeah, confirmed. This was the instruction. Amar Agai Guruhanat was given to Kurma Brahmana. So, we have Madhukanta all the way from the island of Mauritius. All 1.3 million people. How do we understand the difference between a guru who has left his or her body and one who hasn't? Well, Prabhupada said, the devotee, when Prabhupada was, one time in the last days, everybody was crying. And Prabhupada said, why is everybody crying? He says, Prabhupada, because we feel you're going to leave us and we can't exist without you. And Prabhupada said, well, I'm an old man, so if I were a young man, then crying, yes, but I'm an old man, so it's natural I'll die. How long can I live? He said, and Prabhupada said, but I won't die because I will instruct you from within the heart and I will come to you in dreams. So I'll guide you from within the heart. So when the spiritual master is no longer present, then, of course, he's present in his instructions and then he's in presence through guidance within the heart. So in that sense, the guru who's present and the guru who's not present are equal. The difference between the guru who's present, which is why even if you have a Diksha guru, you may require a Siksha guru, because there may be a guru who's more accessible or closer to you. If the guru is present, he knows what's going on, and he can say, don't do this, this is wrong. Whereas if he's not present, then you have his instructions, and then you have to figure out how to apply his instructions to your present situation. Sometimes you may not apply them as well as you should, where another living guru can just come and give you a little slap and say, don't do that. You're going off. So that's the power of being guided by some senior Vaishnava who you respect. So it's the living guru. You see, it's dynamic. He's aware of what's going on. So it's more difficult when the guru goes. It requires more introspection, more depth, more surrender to get that guidance. Not that you can't get it, but you get that guidance and you get the guidance from others as well. I mean, take all the help you can get. It's not one or the other. So it says, Prabhu, you are correct. It is Vedic Brahmana by name Korma. Entire preaching from Mahaprabhu happened during Mahaprabhu's visit to South India. The place is called Korma Kshetra. So the point again is he gave this instruction to a Brahmin. And the reason that I'm focusing on this point right now as the first class is because, as I said in ISKCON, we tend to be overly absorbed in guru as Diksha guru. And there's a reason for that, because Prabhupada was the only guru, and that's how ISKCON started. And how Prabhupada managed his guru was just how we saw guru manages. And so you didn't really, when Prabhupada was present, you really didn't have siksha-disciple relationships. Although with a lot of the seniors and sannyasis, it was like that. It was really very much like that, but it was never formalized, because there was always this idea, so you can't take disciples till your spiritual master leaves. So, never was even formalized siksha. We would think that was wrong. We're going to address that point in another class. But let me just read what you're saying here. Leslie, being a guru, even in the smallest sense, means responsibility to live to live up to the standards in order to share. We can only share as much as we ourselves have. When I am falling below the basic standards, I feel completely miserable and depressed. Hypocritical, yes. But it's true. It's true. You have to exemplify what you teach, and if you don't, you feel hypocritical. But let's shift that around, that it also works the other way, that if you teach it, you should feel, or you want to feel, responsible to follow what you teach, so that teaching helps you. Because, Leslie, if you think, I'm teaching this, and these people see me as some kind of guru, so it's my responsibility to them to live up to what I'm teaching. Even I don't feel like living up to it, even I don't want to, but I have a responsibility to them. Now, from the point of view of psychology, we did a seminar once where the facilitator said, everyone who keeps their vows 50% of the time, stand up. So everyone stood up, because everybody keeps their vows at least 50% of the time. Everyone who only keeps it 60% of the time remains standing. So some people would sit. Everyone 70%, everyone 80%, you know, so gradually 90% people were sitting down, you know, to get 100%. I don't think anybody was standing. You keep your vows. Everything you tell everybody, I'll borrow this book, I'll give it back next week. Little things, you know. Okay, you know, okay, I'll call you back tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Just little things and the big things. Then he had everybody stand up again. He said, who keeps their vows to themselves 50% of the time? Not even everybody stood up, and then 60%. You know, nobody got to like 70. So the point was, we keep vows, when we make commitments to others, we keep them more often than we do to ourselves. So there's a power there in thinking, okay, I'm teaching this, and this is difficult for me to follow. I may not even want to follow it all the time, but because I'm teaching this, I need to be committed to my students, to the people who come to me, who look up to me, to follow it. Now, there's one other thing, Leslie, that's very, very nice as a teacher, and any of you who are teaching, and I hope all of you are teaching or will teach. One thing that's very nice that was taught to me, and I think this came from a teacher outside of Krishna consciousness, but one devotee said, don't teach what you don't follow. So that's an impetus to follow and say, okay, now I'm being asked to teach this topic, or at my programs I always teach about this topic because it's a regular part of the program. So now it's an impetus to follow that in my life. If this is my mantra, don't teach it unless you follow it. As Gandhi wouldn't tell this young boy not to eat sugar for 1 week because he had to stop eating sugar for a week, and he felt hypocritical and he felt it would have no power, potency, if he said stop eating sugar if he were still eating sugar. So that's a principle that I work on, and it also has that effect of using teaching as an element to enable and empower your Krishna consciousness. Now, in the very beginning of the movement, I remember what I was doing. This was very, very early on. I was a very, very young devotee. I would distribute magazines. And when I wouldn't distribute magazines all day, but we would chant. We would go out in Harinam Sankirtan and we would chant, and then we would take turns distributing magazines. And then we would go up and we'd actually give someone like a 3-minute lecture and say, this is bhakti. This is a magazine on bhakti yoga. Bhakti means devotion. Yoga means to connect with God. We're all part and parcel of God. We're all connected with God. God consciousness is our original consciousness. This process of bhakti, it's non-sectarian. It awakens our consciousness, our dormant consciousness. If you try chanting this mantra, you'll feel very happy because it's awakening your consciousness. Like that, I give a little lecture, right? So I was very absorbed, very, very absorbed. So right from the beginning, I realized how important it was to teach Krishna consciousness to others. Even if it's just discussing with another devotee, it's talking to a little kid, you know, telling them a story, whatever it is, it's very important. So if we take what you said, Leslie, and we can use it in a positive sense to say, no, this is very good. Because if you take it in the way I'm explaining it, then it'll help you in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Prabhupada was humble and he had to teach his young disciples how to properly worship him. So that was my point. If you teach, you'll get some honor. the percentage of Western devotees that's declined, that's a whole workshop in itself. Yes. Which we can talk about another time if you want. Pallavi says, I saw the video of Prabhupada, his last minutes on YouTube, totally heart-wrenching, no words to explain the feeling. And so when Prabhupada was leaving, he was hoping that he was leaving his movement in the hands of people who would become guru and who would present Krishna consciousness. And a lot of the gurus became proud, and because they became proud, Krishna removed them from that position. So many of us who were not gurus at that time, we all thought Krishna's teaching us through the failures of these gurus. He's teaching us how they became proud and therefore they misused their position and then they ended up offending devotees. They ended up thinking that they were better. Some even thought that their godbrothers couldn't approach Prabhupada unless through them. Unless they did it through them, they wanted to control situations they shouldn't have controlled. In some way, misused their position, or even if not misused, just thought of themselves as special in some way. I'm guru. In some way, I'm better than my godbrothers who aren't guru. But the fact is, all their godbrothers were guru, but we at that time thought guru meant Diksha Guru, so that was part of the problem. And so we all saw that as a good lesson. Because you might be thinking, well, if they fell down, what about me? But think of it in terms of, no, that was a lesson that Krishna showed you. And that it's an essential ingredient of someone who teaches Krishna consciousness to be humble, because the first item of knowledge in the Gita is humility. And why is that the first item of knowledge? Because you have to approach a superior humbly, that I don't know anything. And so as a teacher, you're also presenting it, well, I don't know anything. I'm only speaking what my guru and gurus have spoken and whatever Krishna will allow me to speak according to my realization. And whatever realization I have, Krishna is giving it to me, and it's only by his mercy that I have it, because he could take all my realizations away in a second. And I can guarantee you there are classes I have given where Krishna just gave me realizations that I can't give those classes now. It's not in me. It came through me. There's a nice story. Mahaprabhu spoke the Atmarama verse in 64 different ways. And so he met Sanatana Goswami. I believe it was Sanatana Goswami, and he said, would you speak what you spoke to Sarvabhauma when you spoke the 64 explanations of the Atmarama verse? And he said, I really can't remember what I said, or I can't say those things again. And he said, because I was speaking to Sarvabhauma, and Sarvabhauma was in a certain consciousness, he had a certain need, and that brought it out in me according to what he needed. So now I'm speaking to you, your need will be different. And it just what he needed came through me, and I don't even remember what I said. So then he related a story that, I forget the details of the story, but the story was something about who understands the Bhagavatam? Who really understands the Bhagavatam? And so this question came up, who understands the Bhagavatam? And or the question was offered to a deity of Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva said, Aham Vedmi, I understand the Bhagavatam. Sukho Vedhi. And Sukadeva understands it. Vyasa Veti Naveti Va. But Vyasa, maybe he understands, maybe he doesn't. Isn't that interesting? And what was the point of that verse? The point with that verse is sometimes something comes through you. So it came through Vyasa perfectly. Maybe he understood it perfectly, maybe he didn't, but it came perfectly. So you as a teacher, things will come through you, and that's what it means to be a guru. You're just connected to this power source, and then you speak, and all of a sudden you speak these words. It's like, wow, that's amazing that I said that. Because now, as guru is just like you're channeling. And maybe tomorrow you couldn't speak those words. It was just an inspiration. So Mahaprabhu was saying, I don't remember what I said. It was just an inspiration. It came from me. I can't say it again. And maybe even Vyasa, he doesn't know clearly, but he's saying it. So isn't that interesting? So that, if we're in that mood, then we remain humble, because that is how Krishna empowers us to speak. And so after we speak, we can be amazed, but never think, oh, I'm special. So humility is the first item of knowledge, and it's through humility that we can speak. Does that make sense? I mean, we have to. That's the whole point. We have to. So Leslie says, some of the people who have taken to the process of Krishna consciousness due to coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada through the program we put on, they have become my greatest support group to keep me on, keep on track. I mean, keep you on track, right? They are more serious and sincere than me, so it inspires me, yeah. That's fantastic. It's giving Krishna consciousness to others is what saves us. I was just speaking to my godbrother, Kalakanta Prabhu. He said, there's a GBC resolution that 10 years from initiation, with the approval of a guru, a disciple can become a guru. So that means, Leslie, if today you were initiated, 10 years from now, with the approval of your guru, you could actually become a Diksha guru. So, you might say, well, I'm not going to get initiated for a while, and even if I do, I'm not qualified, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's okay. You don't have to become a Diksha guru. But Kalakanta Prabhu is saying that he is training. He said, I am training my disciples to become Diksha gurus. I am teaching them that that's one of the functions that Prabhupada wants them to do. And he said, and I will be there as their guru. I will be showing them how to be a Diksha guru. So they'll be me behind them, being training them and guiding them. Isn't that interesting? So what I find interesting about it is it shows how ISKCON is gaining a deeper understanding of Guru Tattva. And as the understanding deepens, then the culture around what is Guru and how those relationships develop also deepens, and specifically it changes. So it is changing a lot. I don't think it's changed enough. There's a lot of misconceptions about Guru still prevalent in ISKCON, and they manifest within the culture. So Timothy says, there are devotees who can help you, but some you can surrender to is rare. Yes. I was just reading today in Jivadharma a very interesting thing. And it was talking about guru-disciple relationships, and it was saying, one of the primary elements of the guru-disciple relationship is Shraddha. He said, but when Shraddha develops, it becomes Sharanagati. In other words, he said, Shraddha becomes Sharanagati. It becomes, Sharanagati is surrender. So you would say, you know, sometimes people say, well, how do I know who my guru is? How do I know? He said, because when your Shraddha matures, it matures into surrender. It just becomes surrender. It's just like, I want to surrender. I want to give my life to this person. I feel, I want to dedicate myself to this person. So if the Shraddha is not deep, then the surrender won't be there. So how do you know who your guru is? Well, the instruction is you hear, have many siksha gurus, hear from many people. But at some point, when you are ready for a spiritual master, when you're evolved enough, and you're, what does it mean to be ready? It means your intensity, your desire to advance in Krishna consciousness reaches a point where you want to advance to a certain, beyond a certain threshold, and you need a guru to do that. And then you're susceptible to that kind of faith, because It may be there that there's this person who is qualified to be your guru, but the faith may not develop because you're just not ready for it. You're not ready for that much Krishna consciousness. And so when you're ready and the right person's there, the faith develops to this point where Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, since Sharanagati, it becomes the same thing as faith, because the faith hits this level where you want to give yourself and say to this person, will you accept me as your disciple, be it a Diksha guru or even Siksha guru, as I have faith in you, I have trust in you, I want to serve you, I'm inspired by you. So it's natural. So if you hear, you know, someone says, I don't know who my guru is, you hear from many. So it may be just a defect on your own side, or it may be you haven't met that person in which your Shraddha You don't say, well, I hear from many, I like them all, but my shraddha hasn't developed. So then just keep hearing. Hear from others. And allow yourself to be open. And there may be, you know, in other words, I think part of the problem a lot of times is not in the Diksha Guru, it's in the disciple. The disciple is, like I was counseling a devotee, and she'd been a devotee a long time, but she hadn't accepted a guru. So immediately in my mind, I said, it's an issue of trust. So when she said, you know, I'm thinking of this one, that one, but nothing's really clicked, I said, did you grow up with trust issues? And she said, yeah. I said, that's the problem. It's not that people aren't qualified. It's a problem of trust in you, because you were cheated when you were young. And now you have issues of trust, which is why after all these years, you can't give yourself to a guru. So sometimes, you know, the issue really is with us. Because there's so many devotees who are qualified to be guru. And in a sense, I don't want to, this sounds impersonal, but in a sense I could say, it doesn't matter who you accept. And that's impersonal, because you accept the person with whom you have a deep relationship and you have trust and so forth. But I'm saying in a generic sense, you could accept anybody. But in a more specific sense, you want to accept somebody who you're close with, who you vibe with, so to speak, same wavelength, where you feel you can give yourself with. When they speak, it resonates deeply with you. So that's there also. But my point is, there may be some resistance on your part or something where the faith can't develop because you yourself maybe lack trust, or your trust has been in the past has been hurt. So, but still, in that case, you just go up, you go on hearing from as many people as you feel like hearing from, and eventually you'll hear from someone and it'll just resonate with you, or you'll meet some. Sometimes you just meet a devotee who's so Krishna conscious, you hear from them once, that's it. That's all you needed. You just said, this person, I can resonate so deeply, or their Krishna consciousness is so deep, it's just pulling it out of my heart. I want to surrender to them. So it's not always an intellectual thing. Although the intellectual is there, is this person bona fide? Are they coming into disciplic succession? Which is less of an issue today, because you have institutions that have bona fide gurus. You have established gurus. You know, these people have been preaching Krishna consciousness for years. But at the same time, you still, Jiva Goswami says, you have to understand what is Krishna consciousness to know if they're teaching Krishna consciousness. You have to understand who is their guru, what disciplic line are they coming from, are they representing Gaudiya Vaishnavism properly, because that's their qualification to be bona fide, quote unquote, guru. So it's both of the heart, and it's also, well, is this person properly representing? Because there are many opera sampradayas in Gaudiya Vaishnavism where they apparently represent Krishna consciousness, but there's some twist there, and it's not really something they're teaching that Prabhupada didn't teach, or something they're doing that Prabhupada didn't authorize. So we have to be aware of that. Sundarup has to go to work, so you're excused. Yes. Hare Krishna, nice class. I have a question. Is there a way to heal lack of trust in someone, like a guru, once it's lost? I think that depends what the guru did. It depends on your relationship with the guru. It depends on you. It depends if you want the trust. It depends if developing that trust back is helpful. Because sometimes Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he's saying, what he's saying is, find another guru you have faith in. Sometimes by developing faith in another guru, it may help you develop faith in your initial guru, in that guru you lost trust in. That's a very specific question, which I think I would need to know details to give an answer. Why did one lose faith? Is there a bona fide? You know, sometimes we lose faith in a guru when we shouldn't. If the guru had some difficulty, okay, well now he's back in Krishna consciousness, so it's okay, philosophically. But then you might say, I feel he's going to fall down again, or it just broke my trust. It may be an issue, trust issue that you have, which may be just that you have a need for high expectations in people, and maybe you can adapt to that and be more broad and be more compassionate towards the person. Or maybe you can't. And in the case, if you just can't, then it's very important that you take shelter of somebody else who you do have faith in, or potentially you would have faith in. because the point here, I think the real point of the answer to this question is that faith is an essential ingredient. So let's say you lost faith in your Diksha Guru or your Siksha Guru. And I might feel like, well, it's unjustified that you lost the faith. But from your perspective, your nature, your psychology, your experience, your understanding of scripture, it all amounts up to you. It amounts to you as the experience of lack of faith. So I would say, in that situation, what's important for you is to find someone you have faith in, because faith is the foundational element of bhakti. If you lose that, then you can't surrender. You just can't give your, if you can't give your trust, you can't surrender. That's the reality. Prabhupada says these small commitment breaches are red flags for us, as you had so rightly mentioned in earlier class. I mean, sometimes we've actually just accepted the wrong person as a guru. That's there without, it was an emotional thing and we didn't really understand. And then it comes out. In some cases, it's the right person, but the wrong person for us. And you find sometimes gurus are extremely, you could say, very liberal in their approach to spiritual life. And it's too liberal for us. It's just, we don't relate to it. And they may say things that just, we don't think are in line with what Prabhupada said. And it's hard for us. Or they can be extremely conservative, and we think they're being too narrow, and it's hard for us. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in finding a guru, you should see if your natures are similar, because maybe one would have known to say, my nature is to be, you know, I'm more open-minded, and this guru is extremely strict and narrow, straight down the path, and it's hard for me. Or this guru is very straight and narrow, and or very liberal, and I'm very conservative, and he says things that are just hard for me to accept. So you can acknowledge that, okay, that was maybe a defect, I didn't check this guru out enough, but is the guru bona fide? Was initiation bona fide? Is he still chanting his rounds, following the principles, something like that? Yes. Then the initiation is bona fide, and I may want to take siksha from another. But what if my guru chants four rounds a day? What if my guru follows three regular principles? And say, well, what's the authority for my person being guru? The authority comes from their guru. And what did their, and who is their guru, and what's the disciplic line? If it's Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the disciplic line is 16 rounds, four regular principles, rising early, so on. And there's a Siddhanta that goes with it. So then if my guru is not even following that, then I have to question, what's his authority to be guru? How can he be, is he just a self-made man that's picking some ideas from here and there and putting it together? Then that may come into question. And if that comes into question, then as you study what is a bona fide guru, then you realize, well, that person is not bona fide. And then in that case, that's grounds for rejecting a guru. So, well, the guru's not even coming from a bona fide disciplic succession. You may appreciate and respect them and honor what they've done for you, but maybe they only brought you to a certain point. So these are all things to consider. I don't know if it answers your question. 64 explanations. 18? 18 and 64 it should be. Timothy, do I take disciples as of April 17th? The answer is yes. I was given authority by the GBC to take disciples as of April 17th. And we're hopefully going to perform our first initiation in Houston, if we can work it out. So in answering your question, Aunt, I have to know who your guru is and what your guru teaches, and you know, because maybe loss of faith is you losing faith because the guru is teaching something wrong. So that's good that you lose faith. Then as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you just take shelter of someone else who's the right guru. But if the guru is teaching what's right, and the guru comes in a bona fide disciplic line and following his guru perfectly, then if you lose faith, then you take faith and you take shelter of another guru, a siksha guru, and you can maintain your diksha connection with that other guru. but not so much the siksha connection, because now you don't have faith, so because of something the guru did. So you have to hear, faith is necessary to hear, so now you have to hear from somebody else. Maybe by hearing from somebody else, that person will increase faith in your diksha guru. Maybe you'll both realize that the teachings are lacking and the relationship that you have with your siksha guru is healthy, and so you remain maybe a little distant from your diksha guru and have a healthy distance. And you still, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Vipin Nibihari, so you still respect them as your diksha guru, but your main siksha comes someone else. Yes. This class is only, Sushma says, oh, this is an amazing class. It's only because we so much misunderstood this. And I'll explain in another class why we misunderstood it. We've only so much misunderstood these things. And you take everything I've said here, and now when you read Prabhupada's books, and you read it within the context of everything you've heard and what you're going to hear in future classes, you'll see it all makes perfect sense. It all makes total sense. And what, we're going to continue class next Saturday, that will be 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'm here, so nothing's going to go wrong, and as long as I don't get up too early in the morning, I'll remember. Invite other devotees to come to these classes. It's very important, because it's going to help devotees understand things that are there in Prabhupada's books, but we read them in a context of everything is diksha guru. Okay, so thank you all. If any of you need to talk to me more, then this is my email address, mahad@aol.com. If there's anything I can do to help you, because some of you, I know you have specific questions, and we can talk or we can Skype. And we're going to discuss a lot about guru. That's going to be very enlightening, so please, all of you, come and invite other people. If you know anybody who's having a crisis of faith with their guru, if you know anybody who's looking for a guru, if you know anybody that you feel needs a siksha guru, because sometimes you'll see, like, devotees are initiated, but they're not doing well because they're not in connection with their guru, they're not getting a lot of guidance. And siksha guru for them is important. So I'll explain the principle of siksha guru, and a lot of devotees don't understand it. But many, many devotees need personal guidance from someone that they can trust and have faith in, because they don't have access to their guru, or they don't want to bother their guru because the guru has so much to do, or the specific nature of their problem is very troublesome, and therefore they really don't want to bother their guru. But there's others who will take that role where they're more closely connected, where there's someone, maybe it's in the same temple, they see them often, they can go to their home and go to the room, they can talk personally like that, they can attend their classes. So that's something. Okay, thank you all for coming. I'm going to leave now.